What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast where every season is sacking season. Today, Terriers talk of the town after taming team from Teesside. Dispatches from Wembley as Plymouth get dispatched at Wembley. Let's talk about six at the Valley and who's going down from League Two. No idea, mate. When am I, a clairvoyant? Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. What a weekend again then, team. Back with you on the Monday slot this week. That's probably going to change next week. What with there being a whole fixture list on Easter Monday, we are approaching the key time of the season in the Football League. And we are very pleased to be back together to talk about it all. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. How are we, chaps?
Hello.
Very good.
Yeah, really good. Good top intro, got to say. Yeah, excellent work there, Matt.
Well, the Football League just sets it up and I knock them down every week. There's so many stories for us to talk about. Now, I mentioned we're powered by Quinbet. How about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Right, it might have been de rigueur in the Premier League this weekend, but no one got sacked in the EFL. So we'll skip the news and get straight into the weekend review, shall we? With apologies that I am more congested than the Championship playoff picture at the moment, we'll kick off with one of, if not the shock of the weekend, previously written off Huddersfield Town and Neil Warnock, proving there's life in the old Terriers yet, as they enjoyed a 4-2 win over high-flying Middlesbrough. And now of all the managers in world football who'd enjoy a victory against an old club, they left under a cloud. Warnock, I reckon, second only to Jose Mourinho. Let's hear from the Town boss now, with apologies to our friends at Quinbet.
I mean, the lads, like I say to them, you know, we were 5-1 to win at home today. One of my teams, that's a disgrace, that, by the bookies. So I hope we cost a few quid. But I just thought, second half in particular, we really got on top of it. And, you know, we enjoyed the battle. Like I said, they're a very good side. They make no mistake. So to come away with 3 points is a real bonus. Especially, we did all right in the first half. We restricted them without a shot, really. Our goalie's not had a shot. But they were better than us in the first half. And to concede a goal like we did right at the death was disappointing, really. But I had to lift them again at half time. And that's what my job is.
What a week it's been for them then, Clarkie. We were hearing, weren't we, in our show last week about the takeover. I think probably the week before that, we all totally wrote them off and said there's absolutely no chance of them surviving. And here they are, only goal difference away from safety. So what do we know?
Yeah, exactly. No, hands up. I thought they were down. I didn't see enough goals in the team. They had a tough run of fixtures. But from that run of fixtures, they've got 7 points in three games. You know, Norwich, Millwall, and Middlesbrough. That is a good return from those three tests, isn't it? And no one predicted that they would beat Michael Carrick's high flying Borough. I mean, it just wasn't really on the cards. And even at half time in the game, you would have said, well, yeah, they're getting beat here. They were trailing, but that goal straight after the second half kicked off from Ruffles was
Josh Russell's Borough's feathers. I just got to get that in.
It really did, yeah. I mean, it was amazing dribble. He had a little bit of luck. And I think for a few of the goals, the ball fell Huddersfield's way, but they were pretty lethal, weren't they? I mean, they only had 24.2% of possession in the game, Huddersfield, but they scored four goals. They made 67 accurate passes inside Middlesbrough's half, which is just feels ridiculously low when you look at what Middlesbrough produced, and that was 349. But it doesn't matter because they scored four and Borough got two. So yeah, they've got a bit of fight about them for sure. I think Danny Ward, you know, up front is starting to offer a little bit more. Romani Edmonds-Green, Sam talked about him before, coming into the team, doing a man-marking job on Zion Fleming against Millwall. Well, this time he had an even tougher task, didn't he? He had Tuber Akpom to look after. And, you know, he didn't follow him everywhere. Akpom did score a goal, but by and large, he was able to nullify him. So Neil Warnock, to identify Edmonds-Green as someone that can do a job on the Championship's best sort of number 10s and playmakers, is a big green tick, isn't it, for the old boy? And look, it now wouldn't surprise you if Huddersfield did survive. They've got something going, haven't they?
Yeah, so he's still got to go to his old club, Cardiff. They finish at home to Reading. He's got to face another old boy in Sheffield United. That's on the penultimate day of the season, though, so he'll be hoping that they're already promoted and that they're on the beach for that one. So Borough then, Adrian. Bigger win as it was for Huddersfield, it's a damaging defeat for Borough, isn't it? 6 points off second Sheffield United, who won at Norwich. Borough played a game more. I mean, it's a bit early to say their automatic promotion hopes are toast, isn't it? But the thing about them under Carrick is whenever they've lost, they've won the next game. Problem is the next game's against Burnley. So
it is, but I think that's good. I think the fact that they've got Burnley up as the next one is a good opportunity to try and bounce back with a result that could really lift their self-belief and you know, put Sheffield United under pressure again, I guess. I think they can wipe the slate here and just move on from it quite quickly. They were in control of the game, never looked like losing. Then it went bang, bang, bang. Three goals very, very quickly. And sometimes a game can get away from you. And I think, thinking Michael Carrick, Middlesbrough have got one of the calmest managers across the EFL. I don't think he's going to get flustered or fazed by too much during his managerial career. It doesn't give me that impression. So that's probably one reason why Middlesbrough keep bouncing back from the odd setback with a win, because he's not the type to overreact. I hated playing for managers that were loving you week in, week out, loving you, loving you, loving you. And you lose a game, have a poor performance, and bang, they panic. And they start to change the team. They start to look at everybody differently. No, you've got to look at things a little bit more even-handedly, I think, if you're a manager. And Michael Carrick's got that.
Clarky, you put me on the spot last week. So I'd imagine we're going to come on to the relegation issues in a second in more detail. If Borough have got 67 points and Luton have now got 67 points, are Luton contenders if Middlesbrough are going to get over that defeat at the weekend, are Luton in the mix as well? Bearing in mind, we've got allies at that football club and Rob Edwards has been on this podcast. Go for it, mate.
Oh, mate, I would love Luton to nick a top two spot. I really would. It's just ridiculous. The run that they're on, the form that they're in. I thought it was a nailed on 3 points.
Yeah,
home to Watford.
If we rewind to last week's podcast, like, we were quite emphatic, weren't we, that was how it was going to play out?
Yeah. I just feel that Watford don't have much backbone. They needed a bit of stomach for that fight, and I never saw them having enough, really. So yeah, look, Luton, they got Blackpool on Easter Monday. I'm going to that one. Really looking forward to seeing them in the flesh. So, I mean, yeah, they're in with a shout. They're the ones with unbelievable momentum, aren't they? I think, you know, there aren't many better teams than Luton across the last 12 games. If you're going on the form table, I think they're third in that particular form table, Luton Town. So, yeah, they're in the mix, but I think Sheffield United will get over the line first, if I'm honest.
24th of April, Kenilworth Road, Luton v Middlesbrough. Maybe it'll be a biggie. Maybe it'll be a warm-up for the playoff final. We shall see. So Luton won their derby with Watford. Swansea won theirs at Cardiff. And Preston, they also picked up a derby victory. This was the local lock-up in Lancashire. They hammered another nail into the coffin labelled Championship-Blackpool. Who do you want to talk about first, Sam? Preston and whether they can get into the playoffs, or Blackpool and whether there's any salvation for them at all?
Probably equally unlikely, I would say, that Preston will get in the playoffs and that Blackpool will survive. I thought it was a magnificent performance from Preston, and I thought a good example of probably where we are in the modern era, that the last time I probably spoke about Preston at any length, some of the supporters were probably calling for Ryan Lowe's head. That was on the back of 5 straight defeats, I believe, at Deepdale. They're now 5 unbeaten at home, 1 defeat in 9. And throughout his recent tenure there, I've always felt, we know his preferred shape, it's kind of a 3-5-2. I never really feel he's had the personnel to carry it out to the best of his ability or to the degree that he's shown in his early management career. Really solid, we know that, a good back three, but they've not really had the creativity, maybe. We know that from the early part of the season. But he had his midfield three back for this game. Whiteman, his importance is so high to their chances of getting consistency. 10 points out of 15, the 5 games that he's been back for. Before that, 9 points in 24. He is the fulcrum of that team, literally. And Brown and Johnson, two kind of guys, veterans really at Preston, have not featured every week this year. So to have that trio back, I think, was all important. And the quality of the goals. I think we've said this a few times this season about some games. I don't know what it is, but all three of them were absolutely beautiful. And I'd want to highlight Cannon in particular, because I think he's really coming into his own now.
And that was the best of the three, right?
Oh.
Is it because of the touch as well?
Brad Potts was pretty tasty, that drive,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It's probably the goal I would have scored, the third one. But I think Potts is better, isn't it, for the power on the strike. There's no margin for error. I suppose there's no margin for error on the third one either, but I think Potts' one probably pips it for me.
What did you make, by the way, Sam, of Potts? Obviously a former Blackpool player, giving it plenty, wasn't he, in front of the Tangerine Army there. I got a lot of time for that. I love to see it. Would you have been bold enough to do that?
Depends how it ended. Yeah, probably.
Not against Ipswich then.
The only time I've got embroiled in that type of caper was after my year at Northampton, where I'd probably get labelled as having a bit of a stinker, but I thought I actually did well from Christmas onwards, and we escaped relegation. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was at Swindon the following year and I was getting dog's abuse, and we won 2-0. Johnny Jackson, friend of the pod, scored free kick in that game. I got the second, and they were still giving me a bit of the full-time whistle, so I think I just went and stood Eric Cantona kind of style and just postured in their direction. So, yeah, I think it's give and take, isn't it? If you're taking a bit of grief, then it's fair game. So, yeah, no, he's really good goal. He's probably one of the people I was speaking about that. I mean, is he a right wing back? He's been a midfield player, hasn't he, for the majority? But he's doing a sterling job for them out there. And, with Cannon's form, they've really picked up, especially at home. So loads of optimism. I mean, I'd give them a chance because Coventry, Blackburn, all faltered at the weekend, but I would be very surprised if they were to make it, Matt.
You'll probably talk about Blackpool. Yeah, quite.
Blackpool or whatever.
Well, I mean, really, I'm thinking that Blackpool would rather we didn't talk about them because they've won 2 of 22 games. They're at Micmac's old club, Cardiff, next. They've still got to play Wigan and Birmingham. So I guess there's potential for points there. But I mean, other than that drubbing of QPR, who've got their own issues, we haven't seen enough, have we, from Mick McCarthy's Blackpool to suggest that they're going to go on the kind of run that's going to be needed to keep them up.
No, we haven't. And, you know, that one of those two victories was against QPR. If you want to play, so you can write that off. Because if you want to play anyone in the league at the moment, it's QPR. They're the worst over Clarkie's last 12 games, 5 points in that time. So, you know, they are abysmal. I think Blackpool were second in that regard. Goal scoring is a problem. They were better in the second half here. He made two changes at halftime, Mick McCarthy, to try and inspire something out of them. Bowler and Pervader came on to give them a bit more width, get his team a little bit higher. They played a bit narrow in the first half. And I think he started in that regard. It might have been a tighter game. But, it's going to be really, really difficult. It's looking fascinating. I mean, you've got QPR on 42 points, Wigan on 34. So that's 19th to 24th, separated by 8 points. So all of a sudden, you've got six teams in it. And I would say a month ago, you would have said Wigan, Blackpool, Huddersfield were dead cert. So it's got the look of a really exciting end to the season, similar to the playoff race. But yeah, I can't see Blackpool surviving, to be honest. Although, I think you just said it, Matt, Luton away and West Brom at home, they're kind of only the games to fear, really. So they might get some points on the board, but I don't think it'll be enough.
Well, next, we are going to talk about a team that Sam just mentioned, Coventry, the team that Adrian tipped as dark horses for promotion. I don't think they'll be particularly thanking you for that. I'm not blaming you for the 4-0 home defeat by Stoke. But
nor should you. Yeah.
This is as big a surprise as the Huddersfield win, right? Because Coventry were 9 unbeaten before this. I know Stoke were in decent form, but Coventry at home usually equals win, doesn't it? Not 4-0 defeat.
I wouldn't have been surprised if Stoke got a draw or even nicked a narrow win in this game, because Stoke have been in brilliant form themselves. But to win 4-0 at the CBS Arena is unbelievable, really. What the secret to the success in this game was a quite ridiculous start to the match. They'd had 11 shots, 5 on target within half an hour. They just came out of the blocks flying, Stoke. Their XG at half time was over 3. I mean, most teams don't register an XG over three in a game. Some teams, it takes them about, if you're QPR, it takes you about a month to get an XG of three. But they did it in the first 45 minutes against an excellent Coventry team. So you've got to respect it. Alex Neil has found a formula. Finally, Stoke City have a formula that they can build on. 4-2-3-1. He's sticking with partnerships. He's found a central midfield unit in Josh Laurent and Ben Pearson, and they're working brilliantly. You've got Tyrese Campbell on one side, you've got Brown on the other, and then Smallbone in behind a striker. And that midfield five are on fire at the moment, as is the right back, Keanu Hoover. I mean, what is going on there? I mean, he was on loan, wasn't he, I think, at PSV earlier on this season, but he's scoring goals for fun from right back, making contributions aplenty. So, yeah, I think the basis of this good run from Stoke is aggression. It's a mentality thing. It's get on the front foot and go and hurt the opposition. And for me, Ben Pearson is the one that facilitates it because he allows the players around him to just go and do their thing and use their legs. And in the past, Stoke have really lacked a defensive midfielder that they can trust in that role. So, yeah, Alex Neil and Stoke have found something. And I think even if he's got different players next season, this formula is one that they should persist with. He just needs to fill the different positions with these types of players because it is working. And they're a match for anyone right now.
The moment might have gone now, but I really enjoyed Clarkey trying to get a rise out of me with some XG jibe in there. Can you imagine?
Not a fan.
No, if I'd have bit because he had a go at QPR's XG.
Well,
can you imagine? That is very modern sparring, that, isn't it?
A modern way to shoot fish in a barrel.
I've got to be honest, I use XG, right? But I'm not having it.
You're not going to upset someone in the pub with your XG pattern, are you?
It's just, honestly, you look at it and you look at some of the numbers and you think, well, how have they come up with that percentage chance there compared to something? For me, it is a little bit of a nonsense, but the number is there and I'm going to use it. And I'm going to use it to dig your boys out because QPR, I mean, QPR are shocking, aren't they, at the moment? Goodness me.
Very much so. Right, they might be.
It's getting to the point where I can't tell my three-year-old the result. I mean, that's how bad it is. he couldn't really understand Graham Potter's been sacked this morning, but he understood QPR lost again.
Quick one. I took my two little ones, Evie and Ted, 6 and 5, to their first ever Arsenal game at the weekend. I had the dread on the match day thinking, oh no, what if it all goes wrong? It didn't. It was all good. Ted crashed and burned in spectacular fashion, absolutely buzzing the whole game. And then second half, fell asleep mid-game. Granit Xhaka got the fourth goal, whole stadium erupt, didn't move. So, so yeah, I'm not sure if Ted's completely sold on Arsenal yet. So we'll have to wait and see.
Too many prawn sarnies.
he'd had about a gallon of that prime stuff as well. So it's a miracle he fell asleep.
My dad fell asleep at the Charity Shield when Forest beat Ipswich 5-0 in front of 80,000 at Wembley.
Your dad?
So, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't like football. So hence why he fell asleep during the game, I think. Wow. Sam, your three-year-old, you know, he might not understand the QPR result, but he might well get a game up front if things carry on as they are. And QPR
He's got the kit home and away. He looks available.
I'll tell you, I've seen him, yeah.
Well, look, QPR might be in League One next season. Two teams who are in League One contested the EFL Trophy Final this weekend. Sam was there. He'll tell us all about it next. So the EFL Trophy Final then went down on Sunday. One team enjoyed their day out at the National Stadium far more than the other.
So much movement in the middle. It's a brilliant header. It's a wonderful start for Bolton Wanderers. Kyle Dempsey. Here goes Dempsey again. Room for Charles. Two for Bolton. It's a gift for Elias Kachunga. And he finishes it. Brilliant Bolton Wanderers. They have blown Plymouth Argyle away at Wembley.
All right then, Sam, was this a fair scoreline? From the highlights I saw, some of the defending was absolutely atrocious. Was that Plymouth in a nutshell, or were Bolton just really good?
Well, Bolton were really good. I've got my notes here. Well, my team's scribbled down here. I don't think there was a player below an 8 out of 10. in my opinion. They were absolutely superb from the first whistle. But yeah, the Plymouth defending definitely left a lot to be desired. A lack of pace, a bit of a lack of mobility, and a couple of interesting tactical things that I'll share. Yeah, the midfield actually, and the personnel that Stephen Schumacher went with, I think he went with Jay Mateta and Callum Wright to get legs in there against Bolton's midfield, to get youthfulness, to get energy, especially without the ball. And if anything, it just completely flipped, and Dempsey and Morley in particular just ran all over the Plymouth quartet as it is. You know, they've got the box in there and the lone front man. Dempsey's power running with and without the ball was just incredible. I mean, he should have had a hat trick in the first half, got a goal and an assist. He was a big difference maker. The other interesting tactical setup from Plymouth was Joe Edwards and Barley Mumba are the two wide players. And during the previous games against Bolton this season, they flipped sides to deal with Connor Bradley. So he's had Joe Edwards up against Connor Bradley in the league games. Better defender, clearly. Yesterday, first half an hour, Barley Mumba on the left. Not only did Connor Bradley have a field day, but Ian Everett had identified the right-hand side. All their good play for half an hour came down there. And Barley Mumba is not a bad player. But of course, if you overload an area to pitch, Gethin Jones from right side to centre-half, Bradley, one of the best players in the league, I would say, probably this year. Dempsey was over there as well. Incredible athlete. And Kachunga, this was the curveball. Kachunga, who's had a wretched season, scored in the semi, scored in the final, maybe the best player on display yesterday. So it's been an incredible renaissance from him. But they all stood, essentially, on that right-hand side. That's where the turnovers were. That's where they got all their joy. So tactically, I thought that was a real success for Ian Everett. The other thing, never seen Bolton kick it as much as I did yesterday. Normally, all the managers I've spoken to, all the players I've spoken to in the League One level this season, and having seen them in the flesh once, it's all about their shape when they're trying to build. Goalkeeper playing to the wide centre-halves who make the pitch massive. Yesterday, James Trafford kicked 90% of the time forward. And what Plymouth did was allow Bolton to pin them 3v3. So you had Connor Bradley on their left-sided centre-half and you had your two strikers. So I think it was Plymouth saying, we're anticipating Bolton are going to play short. We're going to go and press. But actually, Bolton went longer. And so I thought it was a real tactical victory for Ian Everett, married with Plymouth just not being good on the ball like they have been throughout the season, not being polished with their passing, not being crisp, giving the ball away. And Bolton just absolutely punished them. They were relentless. So Bolton were great. Plymouth were poor. I'm sure Stephen Schumacher at halftime was bitterly disappointed, and his changes didn't really alter the flow of the game. So a real bad day at the office for him. And the interesting topic, obviously, post-match, other than, you know, Bolton being so good and teams probably desperate to avoid them now in the playoffs, especially at Wembley, where Bradley and Dempsey, the old cliche, they enjoyed that wide open space like nobody's business. Plymouth, how do they react here, Clarkie? I don't know what you think. That was the big conversation post-match, because a couple of days off and a few beers is probably going to do them some good this week, but test for the young management duo.
Big test. Again, I go back to what I said about Michael Carrick. What are they going to do? Are they going to panic? Are they going to start to look at things differently? Or are they going to sort of wipe the slate clean and go again? It will be a test for them, because that's an embarrassment for Plymouth. It's an embarrassment for Schumacher, isn't it, that he's outcoached on the day by Ian Everett. And Ian Everett probably doesn't get enough credit on this podcast. He's got numerous promotions on his CV. Bolton do have, I think, the joint best defensive record in League One this season. I always think a defensive record is the sign of a very well-coached side. So, yeah, I think he's clearly a very, very good manager. The problem for Plymouth, Sam, is that not long ago they got beat 3-0 at Barnsley. I think just a couple of games before that, Peterborough got put 5 past them. So it's not a one-off, this. If you can get at Plymouth, you can score goals. That's the message this result sends around the league. They're lucky that the fixtures aren't harder, in a sense. But some of their upcoming opponents might just try and replicate what Bolton did. Why wouldn't you?
It wouldn't half help having the best goalkeeper in the league available as well. I haven't looked back at the goals with a fine tooth comb, but I'm sure it probably wouldn't have been four. I think he's that good.
The two from corners were the first goal from the corner. I mean, that was pathetic man marking for the guy to let him go. Yeah, two goals from corners is a giveaway, isn't it? You've just given up the game there and then.
I had a quick 2 minutes with Ian Everett. Obviously, I played with him a long time ago, but I can't remember the exact term he used, but it was almost like we're not snobby about the way we try and play. And I would probably say that there was a little bit of a bit stuck in their way that they have to play. I would probably think that they're adamant that he was adamant that you have to roll it out. Mm. But he's obviously identified something yesterday, and it maybe wasn't as pretty, but my goodness, it was effective. And I probably wouldn't have expected him from the persona and what we've seen from him post-match. It's kind of like, we're a passing team. It's my way or the highway. Well, yesterday, they had a contrast in their styles.
Yeah. Well, what an atmosphere it must have been. I had the misfortune of working on West Ham Southampton at the same time. And let me tell you, that was a bad, bad game. I think I'd rather have been at Wembley with you, mate.
I felt for a few of the Plymouth fans that I took the lift up with in the car park
post match. Let me just jump in there. If one of them was Tatsuki Usi, you really would have felt for him. This is a fella from Japan who started supporting Plymouth 18 years ago after watching them lose to Everton in the FA Cup. He decided Plymouth's the team for me. For the first time in his life, he travelled all the way from the Far East to see them live. He said before the match in an interview with the BBC, "I think it will be the best day ever." Let's hope you manage to get back on the tube in reasonable time.
I listened to a Plymouth podcast before the game on the way or on the Friday, and the amount of supporters that were coming from all corners of the globe was incredible. I don't know if it's the green. I don't know if it's because they're isolated in that part of the country, but
it's a pilgrimage. That's why, isn't
it? They don't half have a lot of fans around the world. It just strikes me. And they're the only Argyle, aren't they?
Right.
I've said it. So yeah, it's all those ingredients, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If you're going to just go for a club, or it's probably the ones that people would decide they're going to support when they were on the Soccer M sofa. All those
not many Wanderers around though, are there? Either.
You'd have thought they would be around as well, rather than just staying in one place. A crowd of 79,389, the highest anywhere in Europe for a football match this weekend. This is for the trophy that everybody says they don't want to be in at the start of the season. 4-0, the biggest win in the final of this competition in its 41-year history. So well done to Bolton Wanderers. Also in League One, the biggest margin of victory in the EFL this weekend belonged to Charlton Athletic. They hit Shrewsbury for 6 at the Valley. Miles Leeburn helped himself to a first career brace as Shrewsbury finished with 10 men after Tom Flanagan's second half dismissal. They're too far off the playoffs for that to be a factor for them in the remaining games, Clarkie, I think at 12 points. But this could have been another truly miserable Charlton season. And for the hat-trick of friend of the pod, Dean Holden, ever since he signed that new deal, which we were kind of, oh, he's done well there, hasn't he? They've won 3 of 5 and they're unbeaten in that time. So it looks like a smart move.
Yeah, they're finishing the season really strongly, aren't they, Charlton? This win, it's the first time they've hit 6 at the Valley since 1976. I mean, I was 1 or 2 in 1976. It's amazing that they've had to wait that long for a 6-goal haul on home turf. So enjoy it is my message to Charlton fans. I hope they did. And there were some great goals. I mean, Fraser with a lovely free kick. Leeburn scored a brilliant breakaway goal. My favourite was Jessamyn Raksakis. Just a fantastic little dribble, solo dribble, quick feet, little lollipop or a shuffle, as I used to call it. And then an impudent little toe poke past the goalkeeper. I think that this boy has got a lot in his locker, Raksaki. I think that considering he's just 20 years of age, the future is very, very bright for him. I would imagine if he doesn't get into the Palace first team next year, we'll see him in the Championship on loan. And based on what I've seen of him this year at Charlton, I think he can shine at Championship level as well. He's got good finishing ability and is a real trickster. So, yeah, this was a terrific performance. And that's the thing about Charlton. They've got a very, very exciting forward line with Raksaki and young Campbell at the moment, young Leeburn. It's youthful enterprise. They've scored 3 or more goals on 8 occasions this season, which is pretty good, I've got to say, for a mid-table team. It's just the fact that they don't keep very many clean sheets like they did in this particular game that's sort of stopped them. Couple of teenagers came on late on in the game as well. So I think there's some good kids there. But what he'll do, Holden, I think he'll have a bit of a rebuild in the summer and look to have a proper tilt at promotion, I guess. Albie Morgan was arguably the man of the match in this game. It's really interesting to hear the quotes afterwards. And basically, Holden said of Morgan, he said he's a great passer. He can score a goal. He works really, really hard. He said, but previous managers and moaned about it. As soon as we lose a game, he's out. Or if a game's not going properly, he'll be the first one that gets the hook. And he says it's impacted his confidence. And I can relate to that as a player that used to get the hook on a few occasions. It's just like, come on, you know, at the first sign of a quiet performance, don't lose faith in me. And I think that what Holden's doing is giving him a run of games and he's seeing a bit of an upturn in form. And he's basically fighting for a new contract, Albie Morgan, along with a number of players there. That's basically what it is for them now. Do you want to stay at Charlton? I'm going to keep my eye on you between now and the end of the season and make a call at the end.
Yeah, fair few players and clubs having the same sort of thing at this time of year, I guess. Well, it might not have been a 6-goal margin, but it was nonetheless a massive win for Cambridge United, gave their survival hopes a shot in the arm with a 2-0 win at Port Vale. It means they're now 5 points from safety with 8 games left to play. This is their first win in 6. Sam, the romantic in me wants them to stay up because they stuck with Mark Bonner when a lot of clubs would have changed manager. Do you think that based on this evidence and what else you've seen, they've got the ability to do that?
Oh, going to be really difficult for Clarkey's third favourite side in League One.
Nah, pretty fourth or fifth, to be honest. But yeah,
I would say they've got to beat Fleetwood in their next game at home. Then they've got 4 toughies, and then they finish with Aki, Burton, Forest Green Rovers. So I think to give themselves a chance, Fleetwood at home stinks of a must win. And this was much improved from them. You could see the confidence flowing out of them when they went 1-0, 2-0. They've had 7 blanks in a row on the road. So fair play to those supporters, the ones that have gone to every game. And they won at Wickham. And I think we covered this game, we analysed it, October the 25th. In the subsequent 10 away games, they've taken 1 point. So it's not difficult to see where their problems lie. It's been away from home. Well, it's been winning matches, but away from home, scoring goals. And there was a shift here from Mark Bonner, who is really likeable when I've met him. And I think he's been really in the doldrums and probably close to the brink. So fair play to the club for sticking by him. But he's played 3-5-2, 3-4-2-1 for the last 11 games and has yielded 6 points. Here, 4-2-3-1. Maybe the biggest reason was Harrison Dunk's availability. He's been out since Boxing Day. He was back in at left back and they won the game. But again, I think it was due to circumstances in the game. Will Mannion made a brilliant save from Ojo at 0-0. That goes in. It's probably a different outcome. 2 brilliant deliveries. One from McGrandles, who looks to be a real clever pickup. You know him, obviously, from Charlton, MK Dons before that. Good player. So he looks like to be a good signing. James Brophy put the first one in. Sorry, McGrandles with the second one for Lloyd Jones's header from a free kick. So really good victory. Good experience in the team. You know, if they can lean on the likes of Digby, Dunk, Ryan Bennett's in the back line now as well. They've got a chance, but yeah, I think it's going to all hinge on those teams against teams in the middle of the games against teams in the middle of the division and the lower reaches.
Well done then, if you were one of the 247 who was in the away end at Vale Park at the weekend. Let's head into League Two. We'll start with what could be a crucial victory for Hartlepool. Dramatic it was too, as they beat Swindon 2-1 to go within 2 points of safety. They came from behind, scored 2 late goals, including sub Oliver Finney smashing in a 25-yarder in stoppage time. It's interesting this, Clarkie, isn't it? Because they weren't beaten under John Askey, but they'd drawn all the games. So you're kind of going, well, has he made them any better or not? But this could be a rare case of a team cycling through 3 managers in a season and staying up, which seems to me very rarely happens.
Well, he's been inspirational. You've got to say, John Askey's his in-game management has been outstanding. You cast your mind back, I think, to his first game in charge. They were 3-1 down at home to Walsall, 2 injury time goals to get a precious point. And here, 2 goals in the last couple of minutes. So he's making a difference. They've scored in every game. since Askey came in. We talked when he was appointed about him being quite an attacking manager, someone that will look to get on the front foot and try and score goals, even though they're up against it. And that's kind of what we're seeing so far. And those two late goals, what does that do to Crawley? What does it do to Colchester United? It doesn't crush them, but it certainly makes them think, uh-oh, is it not meant to be for Hartlepool? Is it us that are going to suffer relegation instead of them? It can cast a few doubts in your own mind when you see another team rise to the pressure. So yeah, it was a huge win. I mean, and good luck to them moving forwards, because yeah, it's they look dead and buried, but they're giving themselves a chance. For Swindon, it's a pretty poor effort. They were in control of this game. The front three were causing a lot of problems. The midfield three, I think, absolutely dictated it for 45 minutes. Hartlepool couldn't get near them. And then it got a little bit tasty after the break, bit more aggression, and they shrunk. You know, they just went into their shells and allowed themselves to get beaten up a little bit, Swindon. And I think Jody Morris described them as fragile, which isn't what you want to hear from your gaffer. Got to say, on Jody Morris, it's not going well, is it? I think just a couple of wins so far. Some weird quotes after the game, bemoaning his young group. You got the Swindon job. I mean, the policy.
Also, he's made his name as a youth coach. So,
yeah, but the policy of the club is to buy young players, young exciting players that are capable of being well coached and developed, and then maybe sold on. So he's bemoaning the youth and the game management, and even an even weirder sort of quote. He said, "I can't instill confidence and experience or give in-game management when people need to deal with what's going on the pitch. I can't do that. If you ever find someone who can do it, it'd be better than Guardiola." What's the point of being there, Jody? In-game management is what managers do. You give players confidence. You pass on your experience so that when they're on the pitch, they might make the right decision. So I just think they were slightly odd quotes. If I was a Swindon fan or even a player, I might be thinking, what's that all about, mate?
Yeah, especially because nobody does in-game management more enthusiastically and often than Guardiola. I suppose that's a strange example for him to cite. Anyway, two wins under 11, 12 points off the playoffs under Jody Morris, so probably not going to make that up, but hope for Hartlepool nonetheless. Good news for them, but not for fellow strugglers Crawley, who are convincingly beaten at Mansfield. Sam, I've had the hump with Mansfield of late. Regular listeners will know that, like Adrian, they're one of the many teams that I have a soft spot for. It's actually where I was born, so there's some legitimacy to that. No wins in four prior to this. Was this just a case of them meeting an obliging opponent, or were they better than they have been of late?
Yeah, I think better. There's a bit of a change in shape here. I think they're probably one of the most flexible teams in League Two. We've always spoken about them having an array of players that can just play loads of different positions. You had Jordan Barry at left back in this game. I'm sure Jordan Barry was a striker in another life. He's played all over the gaff. I think there was kind of eyebrows raised when he played at wing back, and he's now playing at left back, which is incredible. Yeah, it's that diamond that they've utilised a few times, but the forward players in it, Oates, Keeler Dunn's had a really good start. I think he's five goals now. He had 3-3 when he first joined a brace here at the weekend. And Akins, who is, what should I describe him as? Well, he's one of Clough's lieutenants, isn't he? He's Adam at Burton.
I mean, he must have played in every position apart from in goal.
Oh, he has.
Maybe he's even played in goal. I don't know.
He may work very well have done. So that's three talented forward players. But yeah, they scored four in their previous five games. So to get four here gets them back up and running. They needed a bit of consistency. Crawley, can you imagine being one of their players, Clarkey, after taking 11 points from a possible 15? They can't have done any more, really. Well, they could. They could have won all those games. But three wins and two draws in their predicament, they'd have fought Hartlepool, home to Swindon, especially hearing they're a goal down. You're thinking, we're coming back in the dressing room. There's still a nice five-point cushion. Hang on a minute. It's 2 points. They'd have been on their phone straight away, gutted that Hartlepool have given themselves an opportunity to claw them back. And it's funny, speaking about the naivety, maybe the age, the youthfulness of Swindon's squad. Well, Crawley have got a lot of the Swindon lads, obviously, with Scott Lindsay taking the Crawley role. You've got Gladwin, who's the wrong side of 30 now, brilliant player as he is, and Anthony Grant, who didn't have a club and Crawley have signed him in January, or post-January, sorry, because he's a free agent, 35 years old. He's anchoring the midfield at the weekend with Joel Lynch behind him. Dion Comroy's a really good footballing centre-half, but there's no legs there. There's no legs. And that trio of Mansfield front players I just described, I think that's probably where the difference is. So it may be where Scott Lindsay has to just maybe get a player in alongside Anthony Grant, or just think about how they can close games down a little bit when they're away from home, where they've had one victory all season. So to answer your question, Matt, yeah, I think they were obliging opponents here, but probably because of the last few weeks is taking its toll, and they probably saw this game as a bit of a gimme. Couple of dates for you. 22nd of April, Crawley v Hartlepool, and they finish Crawley at Swindon, 8th of May, which will be a bit of a needle match.
Just a little bit. I was going to chuck a date in as well, the 18th of April, which is a week after the Easter programme, isn't it? Colchester at Crawley. I think Colchester have the toughest run in by far. And you thought, oh, they're out of it, but they're not. They're absolutely not out of it. They're only 3 points clear of Hartlepool. They've got, Colchester have got Stevenage away, Salford away. They've got Sutton at home, Donny away, Crewe at home, and they've got Crawley away. So they've got some tough games at the top end of the table that I wouldn't fancy them in. So it's a tough gig for Ben Garner.
It's hurting my head a little bit, but Ben Garner was assisted by Scott Lindsay last season at Swindon. So that's Colchester Crawley as well. But I'm sure those two, well, not that there's any animosity at all between, I wouldn't think, between Lindsay and the lads that left Swindon to now be playing for Crawley. But Garner and Lindsay definitely were allies.
Isn't it funny season, though? Because as a combination, Garner and Lindsay at Swindon had something good going, didn't they? That's something good going, and now look where they are. They're at the bottom end of the table, fighting to stay in the division. It's sometimes moving on doesn't pay off, does it?
Grass isn't always greener.
Was that only last summer? That's mad. Port Vale beat Swindon in the playoffs. Garner's had two jobs since. Incredible.
So is Lindsay.
That's the football league. Yeah. In a nutshell. Right, we've spoken about a lot of dates there. How about Saturday? Because that was when our tweet of the week was posted. It comes from Charlton's Terrell Thomas. Unusual one this, Sam. I wonder what you make of it. He says, great day at the Valley, 2 exclamation marks. Have a good weekend, addicts. You know, I don't like people saying, have a good weekend. Okay, actually, it's enjoy your weekend, which I'm not a fan of. But I've included it because this is the first tweet of the week that has a GIF in it. The GIF in question is a cricket player who I don't know, but he's playing in the IPL, hitting the ball for 6. Obviously, Charlton scored 6 goals on Saturday. How do you feel about GIFs in tweets generally? And how do you feel about cross-promoting another sport in a GIF?
Well, I didn't get it because I didn't realise it was a 6 reference, probably because I wasn't too across the Charlton result until Clarkey spoke of it there. But I like it. Yeah, it's better, isn't it? It's inventive. I was going to say, you know, like home run would be, you know, for wow, great weekend. But with the 6 reference, it works on all levels. So, I mean, the copy's not magnificent, is it? It's a lack of emoji. There's no fire there for Clarkey. So I'd have to realistic that it's a 7.
Big issue with, obviously, that there's no caps on the Valley or the addicts, which is... Yeah, which is a problem. But his choice of GIF that is a spectacular 6. And that's what Charlton delivered. And the first reply from someone called Tom, I don't know how you've gone from fourth choice to prime Roberto Carlos, but I love you for it. I like that.
I mean, that's a 9 straight away from Tom Cod 2000.
Lucky, what's your opinion on GIFs? Because you're such a prolific tweeter and you're by far the best of the three of us at it. But I'm not sure I've ever seen you put a GIF in a tweet.
You know what, mate? I don't know how to do it. Where'd you get
even from? I know how to do it.
Where'd you get them from?
In photos, isn't it? Or
when you compose a tweet, you get the option. Say if you're doing it on your computer, you get the option at the bottom. There's an option to add a photo, option to add a GIF, option to add a poll, option to add an emoji.
But then what do I do? Do I type in six and it gives you lots of examples of what six might be?
Yes,
you got it.
Ah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's your task then.
Or just do what I do and just look for David Brent for everything, every scenario.
You watch me go. I'm going to be gift-tastic from now on. Thanks for the advice.
All right. Well, that gives me the perfect opportunity to segue nicely into your promo for our socials, which are going to be gift-filled from this point.
How can I be a social media manager for this podcast when I don't know how to do a GIF? This is embarrassing. At What the EFL. It's not hard. On Instagram, on TikTok. I tell you what, some of Sam's videos last week did some good numbers on TikTok, I've got to say. So, whatever you said, Sam, I can't remember what it was. It got shared quite a few times, I think. So, yeah, join us on there if you want to see a few clips of us in action. On Twitter, we're trying to make our Twitter feed a bit more exciting, but, yeah, bear with us. Time is an issue. It's at EFL What the on Twitter.
Don't look a GIF horse in the mouth was just what I was thinking of then. Just give us a follow and then you'll see some good content. Nice. Maybe. Before we go, let's give another plug to our friends at QuinnBet of Enhanced, their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers at sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinnbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, that will do for this week's show. We'll be back again next week when we'll round up that bumper Easter weekend of action. We'll probably have a better idea then of who's going up, who's going down, and who's staying just where they are. Thanks then to Sam and Adrian for being with me today, but thanks mainly to you for listening. Tell somebody else if you enjoyed the pod, whether that's on social media with a GIF or just, you know, face-to-face like the old days. We appreciate your company and we'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.